The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
I'm Arielle Lori, host of the Blonde Files podcast, where every Wednesday I cover all things wellness. After nearly dying from addiction almost 9 years ago, I have been on a mission to live my best, most fulfilled life, and I'm sharing everything with you, from how to achieve optimal health and well-being to the best beauty tips and even cosmetic procedures. I cover it all with raw, candid conversations with the industry's top experts and inspirational guests. Make sure to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode.
This is Amanda Hirsch from the Not Skinny But Not Fat podcast. You might know me from Not Skinny But Not Fat on Instagram, where I spend my time talking about reality TV, celebrities, everything happening in pop culture. I also talk to some of our favorite celebs and reality TV stars. We talk about what's going on. Tune in every Tuesday and just feel like you're talking with your best friends in your living room.
Hi guys, on today's podcast, I have a stand-up comedian who literally blew me away because he managed to get his own one-man show on Broadway that was just selling out show after show. Everyone's obsessed with it. I went to see it because I was influenced by the masses and it was so good. Just For Us, his show is called. It's Alex Adelman is on the show today. He's also going to receive a special Tony Award for Just For Us. So he's really freaking killing it. And I hope you enjoy our convo.
I want you to present yourself as in your full OG name.
David Yusuf Shimon Ben Elizaruvian Alexander Alevi Edelman? Or like a different one?
No, that one.
Oh, yeah, sick.
But do it slower.
David Yusuf Shimon Ben Elizaruvian Alexander
Alevi. Wait. As somebody who speaks Hebrew, mm-hmm. I want to say it like the Hebrew way.
It's so
David Ben Yosef.
Wow. It's like so weird to hear my name back to me, but absolutely not.
No,
David, I'm going to tell you how my grandfather would talk.
Okay, fine. But slow.
David Yosef Shimon.
David Yosef Shimon.
Oh my God. That's not my name. I feel like that singer from the mid 2000s. That's not my name.
That's not my name.
They call me David.
Okay.
They call me Shimon. But yeah,
David Ben Yosef.
Fine. David Yosef Shimon Ben Elazar.
Ben Elazar, because your dad is Elazar.
Yeah.
So you're Elazar.
You know, everyone
son.
Called him Elazar growing up because my, you know, Elazar Ruvain. Wow, now I'm lost. Alexander. That's my English name. It's my
right.
English size name.
So you chose that one out of the whole lineup.
Yeah, but by the way, that's like my full Hebrew name. That's the thing that my grandparents would yell at me when they were like,
wow.
You know. Like, David, that's a show. Like, yeah. My grandmother had this
it's
joke.
Not in
which
your,
is
it's not in your
passport.
It's not
passport. In my passport. Okay, I would need a 6-page passport.
Yeah.
But sometimes people are like, is that your real name? And I'm like, yes and no. Like, is your Hebrew? But by the way, not to be serious about this thing for a second, which is like a joke to me. Like, it's within the show, it's a joke within the special, if you're referring to it.
Don't worry, we'll get to it.
I know. But like a larger question is like, what do you consider to be like, because for a while when I was younger, my real identity was sort of like a kid who went to like a Lubavitch day school and then went to like, or for like kindergarten and pre-K and then moved to like a yeshiva day school. And so like my Orthodox life up until a certain point was like the defining world that I lived in.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if someone asked me, how do you feel? I was like, I feel like a David Yosef. And sometimes when and like after a certain age, how do I feel? I felt like an Alexander David, you know,
yeah.
element. So like,
because they were probably calling you David, all that big name.
Well,
in the
eventually
baseball.
They started calling me Alex because I went to a yeshiva day school. So there were like a million Davids. And so they were like, Alex. And I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And then my brother is Eitan Binyamin and Austin's just Shmuel. So it's like.
Wait, AJ, your brother, who's the Olympian.
Yeah. AJ is Eitan Binyamin.
Eitan Binyamin. That's his Jewish name.
Yes. But I switched it in the special because for some reason I thought it would be like. A weird violation of privacy to give out my brother's, like, I don't know. That's a strange. It's a strange.
Really?
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
That's an interesting anecdote.
Weird boundaries around, like, what is and isn't, like. Like, I've always felt very averse to, like, talking about, like, my spiritual life
mm-hmm.
publicly and also, like, my sexuality publicly. Like, it's always, like, to me, maybe it's because of how I was raised. I was always like, those are private. And now
yeah.
I'm, like, changing things, like, a little bit.
When you say spirituality, you mean in the religious sense?
Yeah, but also how I feel about like death, and also how I feel about like, you know, things that I guess an English person or like a Anglophone would call karma or things like that. Like, I've always been like a little bit.
Well, now
like,
I want to know how you feel about death and karma.
Oh, so we go to Jewish heaven, which is Christian hell.
Okay.
So Jewish heaven is the same as, oh yeah, Jewish heaven is the same as Christian hell, because Jews get to be among like the country club Christians they always want to be a part of, and Christians have to hang out with Jews. So that's exactly how it is. There is a Jewish heaven and it is Christian hell. So
I love that.
It's a country club outside of Cleveland. That's Jewish heaven.
I wanted to ask you, before we started the podcast, you did use British slang with me.
Yes.
Chuffed.
Chuffed.
You said you're thrilled. Chuffed. That's cute.
I'm chuffed.
You're chuffed. I love that. And then I was like, wait, you did work for the BBC. Do you still work for the BBC?
No. I had a radio show with them for like 6 years and it was wonderful. But the radio show is about young people. And someone was like, guys, I'm like 34 years old. It's time to like call it quits. And they're like, you're still young for us. And I'm like, I hosted a radio show for the BBC.
Talking.
About young people. Like hosting a BBC radio show about young people is like hosting a North Korean TV show about democracy. Like it is such a like old audience, but it was actually really nice because like.
But you give older soul. Like you're 30, what, 4 or 5?
I just turned 35.
35. But you do have like an older soul vibe to you.
What does that mean?
You're judging.
I'm not judging. I'm just like curious about that, because usually when people are like, ah, she's an old soul, what they mean is like she doesn't know how to use a dishwasher.
No, and I so, mean like, okay, you know the actor Jake Johnson?
Yeah.
He's funny. He was a new girl.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah.
So he said something to me that was I thought was really funny, and I related to it on some level, that he was like, think of me now. That's how I was like born. Do you know what I mean? Like with the same attitude towards life and like, you know what I mean?
I was a weird kid, but I've also changed a lot. Like I was so weird and I'm still like so weird.
You think you're weird?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like in what way?
I require an hour and a half of explanation on television to sort of like have people get me. And it's not always enough. How am I weird? Like I have weird things that like I care a lot about, like I said.
Yeah.
And also like feel very private on. And then there are things that like I don't really care about in terms of like I'll answer sort of most like topical questions about like if you ask me like how I feel about like some XYZ current event thing, like I don't feel touchy about telling you how I feel about it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, if someone said to me like, hey, where are we as a culture artistically or something like that? I'd be like, I don't know. That's not for me to like. I have I have weird hobbies. Like I love pottery and like.
That's cute.
And like
have you ever done the ghost scene with somebody?
No, because actually it's.
Not pottery.
Well, it actually is. It's just not good for the pots. It's like not an efficient throwing motion.
Imagine you start dating someone and they're like so dying to do this fantasy and you're like, it's actually not good for the pot.
Yeah, it's actually not like a very efficient way to throw. It's just like you're both in each other's way. Like it's not actually helpful. Like it really is gets in the way of a sort of like a more tactile.
It's never helpful. Like even in those scenes when guys like come behind the girl to help like bowl.
Yeah, it's
or
never
bat.
Good.
It's never
or
helpful.
Pool is never like billiards. Like whenever you see a guy showing a girl billiards, I was like, don't do that. Tell her like straighten her elbow and and not tuck her chin, and there you go. Like, what's this?
Rub your penis on her backside.
I mean, there
that'd
is
be nice.
There is a lot of that with every couple's activity, by the way. Or just like any partner thing, wherever. Like, it usually is not good for the activity, right? Like,
yeah.
Like the partner thing elbows out the activity pretty hard. Yeah. It's like, oh, let's go on a hot air balloon thing together, or let's go hiking together, let's do an escape room, and then
right.
Like. Doing an escape room is it is the first thing you escape is your relationship. Like that is the first thing that happens.
Do you like escape rooms?
I fucking love escape.
Oh,
can I? I'm sorry to curse. I've heard people curse on this podcast.
Yeah, curse.
Yeah, I fucking love escape rooms.
I'm sure you've been seeing this everywhere. This is the mascara going viral right now. You know, when things go viral, they go viral for a reason. L'Oreal Paris Lash Paradise Mascara is it. And I just want to tell you, like, yes, I know there are a lot of like fancy schmancy brands out now. And like, I just want to give a moment for, you know, the OGs like L'Oreal, that you can get it at a drugstore. You can order it on Amazon. and it is the best freaking mascara that you will use. It gives so much volume and length, and it's perfect for a done-up eye look, but it's also perfect for like, oh, I'm just wearing mascara look. Okay. Lash Paradise is a staple for any trending look. Like I said, intense volume and length gives luxe level lashes, which we love. Also, the bristle brush is absolutely perfect. It is fluffy and it makes your eyelashes look fuller instantly. It's the perfect mascara and lash look for day into night. And guess what? It lasts all day. So drop those falsies. No, but seriously, drop those falsies, you guys. It's not a good look for you. Lash Paradise Mascara gives you all the drama that you need for your lashes. And guess what? You can order Lash Paradise by L'Oreal Paris on Amazon. So the easiest buy of your life. Add it to cart. Buy it now. Lash Paradise on Amazon by L'Oreal Paris. So this baby is coming this month. And as much as I'm unprepared, there are also some things I'm very prepared with. And one of those things is the Dreamland Baby Co. Swaddle. Swaddles, you might have never heard the word, okay? If you're not a parent or reading about being a parent or have nieces or nephews or whatever, friends with babies. Swaddles become such a huge part of your life. From the moment that baby's born, you're going to see nurses in the hospital swaddling these babies and you're going to be like, I can do that. And then you can. OK, I've watched many tutorials and what's most helpful for me is a swaddle that you buy that is ready to go, that has a zipper or has some Velcro, and they make it easy. But so Dreamland Baby Co. has amazing swaddles, but moreover, they have a weighted swaddle, which is amazing because babies need that tightness, that hug, that, you know, they just came out of the womb, okay? They're surrounded by things and warmth. And a weighted swaddle really helps the baby calm down, really helps the baby fall asleep and stay asleep longer. So if you guys are interested in getting an amazing swaddle for your baby or getting an amazing gift for a friend that's going to have a baby, go to dreamlandbabyco.com. and enter my code NOTSKINNY at checkout, and you're gonna get 20% off site-wide and free shipping, which is an incredible deal. This offer is for new and existing customers. Again, go to dreamlandbabyco.com. The code is NOTSKINNY. You're gonna get 20% off and free shipping.
I don't mean to make like assumptions or stereotype you, but you worked for the Dodgers and the Red Sox.
Yes.
Is that the vibe you think you give as like a sports dude?
I think I'm like, I can speak to sports dudes, but yeah. Like, but again, that's another way that I'm weird. Like, I love baseball and sports, but for like the poetry of the game. So when you talk about a guy who like doesn't fit in a sports bar, like yeah. I was in a sports bar once in Silver Lake with a friend of mine and we're watching the Major League Baseball playoffs. And
that you care about, like you want to,
I care enough, but he was like, God, I'm really hoping the Brewers can do it this year. And I was like, you know, it just feels nice to sort of see like a combination of an urban environment and an agrarian environment. He was like, what? And I was like, well, it's like a square and a circle at the same time. It's such an overlap of different types of sacred geometries. And he was like, do you think that's like very relatable to like the five people sitting around this table? And I was like, well, maybe not, but it should be interesting. Like, it's actually like a spiritual communal activity. Like, right? Baseball is sort of like an American religion. Everyone's facing the same way. There's a rising and falling, like the ocean or breathing or sex. And he was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. So, like, I love baseball, but I think I love it in a way that's, like, not generally. I'm just a little more thoughtful than everybody.
No, wait, so how did you work for both these teams?
That's actually really nice.
It's a nice story.
Or like, a nice part of my life. Like, when I was 13... this woman named Colleen, who's a big part of my life, we sort of like, I was rollerblading around Fenway Park. Like, I did love baseball. Like, I cared a lot about baseball. And I used to rollerblades because that used to be socially acceptable for children. And I think rollerblades have fallen out of favor. They're too dangerous and too dorky for anybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you saw someone on rollerblades,
no, I know. We rollerbladed. Our generation rollerbladed.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was perfect. It was so fun.
And you could get, like, really good at it.
I was really good.
You were
at
really
it.
Good.
I'm like still an embarrassing amount of good at rollerblading.
Would you rollerblade now?
Oh, 1,000%. If it was feasible. Now I use a city bike, which is sort of like the same thing.
Wait, so you rollerblade around Fenway?
Fenway. I ran into this woman, Colleen. She took me on a tour of the park and sort of on this tour, I met this guy named Larry Lucchino, who was the president of the Red Sox. And he thought I was like amusing and he gave me a job. I'm sorry, he passed away last week.
What?
So it's like a really weird, crazy timing.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I'm going to his funeral tomorrow in Boston. It's like pretty. But yeah, this guy who is like much older than me. And by the way, worth a Google, like a really interesting, fascinating
name?
Guy. Larry Lucchino, this like Italian from Pittsburgh. He was like, look at this like funny little Jew. And I said something to him and he laughed at me and he looked at Colleen and he pointed and he's like, can we keep this guy? And so they kept me around. I worked at the Red Sox from like 2003.
Doing what?
First, I wrote the kids newsletter.
How old were you?
I was like 13. I was like 13, 14 years old. I wrote the kids newsletter.
That's like a dream job for a kid that loves baseball now.
Unbelievable. It was so cool. It was like amazing. By the way, I'm now as an adult, like running into some of the people that I like ran into as a kid. Like I did the Tonight Show the other night and I had a picture of me interviewing Jimmy Fallon from the premiere Fever Pitch, which they filmed when I was a kid. And
that's,
so when working with the Red Sox.
Wild. I feel very weird about that timeline.
What?
They filmed Fever Pitch with
Drew
Barrymore.
While I was a child.
That's wild. I remember that movie like it was yesterday.
Pretty good movie.
Very good movie.
I really like it.
I mean, Jimmy Fallon should have acted more.
I mean, I think he's done pretty well for himself in terms of like talk show host.
No,
but, like,
yeah.
But you're right. Like, by the way, Taxi, also underrated. Not sure if you've seen Taxi.
No.
Oh my God. It's
Wait,
Queen Latifah.
The OG Taxi?
No, the Andy Kaufman series from the 70s. Yeah, he's great in that. He's so good in the Andy Kaufman, Jim Brooks.
Wait,
Judd Hirsch.
Queen Latifah. It's ringing a bell.
Yeah, it's like a little, it's like a comedy. It's like sort of an action comedy. It's like pretty funny.
So you crossed paths with Jimmy Fallon when you were working at the
Red Sox. Because he
at 13 when you're not legally even supposed
I'm
to
like
work.
I'm 15 years old. By the way, at some point I was like, am I legally allowed to work here? And they went, we feel like we could actually have a lot of problems if we asked that question.
Were you getting paid?
Yes, I was getting paid.
That is wild.
I was getting paid.
But that's also like a dream. It sounds like the way you ask actors, like, how'd you start? And they're like, I was discovered. Like, you literally were at Fenway. The Red Sox gave you a job.
Boston was a great place to, you know, I hate to sound a little like, in my day, like a little conservative here. But like, it does feel like we have a slightly different America that kids grow up in now versus how it was, you know, 20 years ago, obviously, which should be evident. But like, my parents, they just sort of let me just go wherever I wanted and do whatever I wanted. My father, sometimes I'd leave the house, my dad would be like, try not to get killed. And I was like, sure, Abba. Like, that was my...
Right, and we didn't have a phone. Like, I
had a phone with Snake on it. I thought it was a cool... Remember those, like,
yes,
those,
I
like,
loved Snake.
T9 phones?
But I don't even know if you had it then.
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I had a cell phone until, but, like, I'd call from the landline at the Red Sox. I'd call my parents' landline and be like, you can pick me up. My dad would be like, it's midnight. I was like, I know. But it was so cool. I had all these great memories. I was there when they won the World Series in 2004. Not at that game. That game was in St. Louis, but I was there. I was at the game in Colorado when they won the World Series in 2007. I flew back from Yeshiva in Israel to go. But like amongst my life and amid my life, I was like, I had a hand in at the Red Sox. And then I made it kind of a dumb mistake. I took a job at the Dodgers, which wasn't very good.
From the Red Sox?
Oh, yeah. I thought I was going to be like a young baseball hotshot.
It sounds like it.
I like had a whole like plan. I was going to like.
Wait,
know.
So what age did you start working for the Dodgers?
I guess it was the end of, it was the beginning of 2008. A bunch of people left after the 2007 World Series, including my boss, a guy named Charles Steinberg, who's a
like
wonderful.
Throughout high school, you were working at the Red
Oh,
Sox.
Yeah. I would go to Fenway during breaks in classes.
Wow.
Or I would go to, which was my place was like. My school is like 15 minutes away from, I'd rollerblade down there, or I'd bike down there, I'd take the T. Or sometimes a combination, it'd be quicker. I'd like rollerblade to the T station, get on the T, go down to Fenway.
I'm trying to picture you. Were you in a yarmulke then?
Oh, yeah.
Full.
Yeah, there was
butt.
A guy there who I actually had a bit of a, who I'm not crazy about, but he called me yarmulke boy.
Mm.
And after a while, you know what?
Did you have the tzitzit and everything?
Yeah, of course.
Really?
I think I tucked him in sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah.
I wore the tzitzit. I was like a full.
So what age did you wear the tzitzit in yarmulke until?
Until I got to NYU. I think I stopped doing it at NYU. And you know what? Sometimes I wish I hadn't. But I was sick of meeting people where they like shake my hand. And I'd be like, hey. Like they look at the yarmulke first. And it kind of annoyed me. It put me on the back foot a little bit. And
like you didn't want that to be like a it was too like revealing kind of right away.
Yeah, it felt a little exposing, but sometimes I go back and forth. Like I wear it in my private life sometimes. Sometimes really? I wear it walking around. Like,
what does the tzitzit like, symbolize really? I never really know.
I used to know this and now I'm not confident in my answer. I remember with the tchelet symbol, the blue.
Yeah.
The blue, the one blue string. But yeah. Oh,
did
gosh.
Your parents care when you stopped wearing it?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think my parents are pretty like live and let live. They're very also the thing is, with due respect, whenever anyone asks me how my parents feel about my profession, my Judaism, I'm always like, you know, I'm like a 35-year-old man now, right? Like, so I see where like, are your parents okay with this? And I'm like,
no, but I'm talking about then, not now.
Okay. I don't remember, but you know what? I think it did matter to them, but also like, you know, I have like great respect for people that like live. My cousin Steve works at Warner Brothers, and he's like, he works on the business side. He wears a yarmulke, tzitzit every day, and like, it's a real like.
Well, now it's like hashtag brave.
It's a credit to Judaism. People love this guy. He's like a really sweet man. And he plays, you know, sometimes I would like when I was working on the Dodgers, I'd drive over to the lot to play basketball with him.
Wait, the Dodgers are, excuse my sports
Los
ignorance.
Angeles, Los Angeles.
So you moved to L.A. at some point?
Yeah, I moved to L.A. planning on not going to college. And then one day my
After
boss,
high school.
I spent a year in Israel. And then
After high school. Yeah.
In yeshiva. In like a sort of like rabbinical seminary. And then I spent some time in.
Did you like living in Israel?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a fraught time, as it seems to always be. But like, there was a attack at a school near where I studied called Merkaz Harav, and we knew a bunch of the kids, and it was like and that was like pretty jarring. But it grew me up. It was good, and someone had opened up a comedy club there, and so like started to get a little more interested in comedy. A place called Off the Wall. Get it.
Wait, but you, yes,
cute little
but kid. You, because like when I think of visiting Israel or people that study abroad in Israel or like me that I lived there for years, it's like fun. People don't know this often if they haven't visited. They don't know that it's like Tel Aviv is like a cool European city vibe. Beautiful yeah. people, beaches, pubs, going sure. out, fun. But that isn't the vibe when you're at yeshiva.
Like, not in Jerusalem.
Not in Jerusalem, at yeshiva, all men, like you weren't going out.
No, but like I was going out a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like drinking for the first time. I was like in a part of Jerusalem called Katamon that was mm-hmm. like, that was not like, of, like I had friends who were in like Beit Shemesh or Ramat Beit Shemesh, which is
Beit
like,
Shemesh, yeah,
which
yeah.
is like outside of the whole thing. And by the way, like, you know, obviously my feelings about Israel, like more complicated now than they were then because I'm an adult and like a lot's happened. But like, you know, there is a real, I really liked that comedy club because it was very mixed. Like, you
is
know,
it still there?
I don't think so. I think the guy who runs it, who's a lovely man, runs comedy nights still around. But when I went back to check, I think it was gone.
Wait, I want to know the progression. So like high school, yeshiva, then Dodgers?
High school, yeshiva, Dodgers in the summers, and occasionally flying back for like key events, like big meetings or like big, like
flying back from where?
NYU. By then I was like going to NYU.
You were going to NYU.
Yeah, but I was still like, I was kind of part-time at the Dodgers. Like that we had the World Baseball Classic. I flew back for the WBC.
Why were you calling it a mistake before?
You know, this guy who bought the team, his wife hired a bunch of Red Sox employees because they were from Boston. And then they got a very public divorce and all those employees got fired pretty much, with the exception of like one or two really great people who are still there, I think, actually. And it kind of like jaded me against like, I didn't really want to work in baseball anymore. Like I didn't really want to work in like, once you see how the sausage is made, it can be like a little.
It's
it
funny like that some people dicey. Say sausage and some people say sauce.
What?
Oh, no one says sauce.
Once you see how the sauce gets made.
That's
what's so bad about sauce? It's like crushed tomatoes and like water.
Wait, oh my God. I've been saying sauce.
No, it's sausage because are sausages sure? are disgusting. You know what goes into a sausage? It's like a bunch of like rat parts.
Like hot dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. No one says sauce.
Oh my
sauce.
God.
What are you talking about?
Did you know it was sauce? Do you know it was sausage? Don't you lie to me. You knew?
But wait, is it sauce
oh my
or
God.
Sausage?
I've been oh my God. I literally wrote sauce to somebody like important the other day.
By the way, you can get away with it. It's like a nice like narrative
no,
flourish.
No, but do you think they thought I was dumb?
No, I'm sure they thought you're being artistic. You can say like, you can
oh God,
you can do a little spin on a cliche.
Jersey?
What are you talking about?
We're in New York. Oh, No, but sauce makes sense too, Alex, because in a sauce, you never know how it's made. Could be tomato sauce, could have sugar, could have salt.
Okay, it's okay if you say, like, if you say a deer caught in a searchlight, but that's not the cliche. The cliche is a deer getting caught in the headlights. Oh, you're God. Like, well, a deer probably gets pretty scared if it gets caught in a searchlight. You're like, yeah, but that's not the same thing. It's
my
like
God, my whole life has changed.
Yeah, but in a very minor way and for the better.
Yeah, but like, you know,
really, that's all it takes to blow your mind. Do you know that the
no, I mean, yeah, I've been confidently throwing that out there.
No,
confidently
you...
just today I said, yeah, I mean, isn't there flip the switch? I think I said flip the script today. Is it switch or script?
You can flip it. You flip the script.
OK,
but you can also flip...
think about it. Flip the switch.
That OK. Flipping the script means that something that's that previously wasn't happening is now happening.
Right.
Flipping the switch means that a thing that is supposed to naturally happen happens once you do the active instigator. So, like, I don't know that.
Maybe this is
an Israeli thing.
It is.
It's like a little.
I grew up. It's a very Hilaria Baldwin of me. But I grew up like really mixed, like back and forth. I'm actually a walking Hilaria Baldwin. But I
think she can walk.
But she can have the receipts of, like, you know, she's like, I summered there. I'm like, no, I lived there for 7 years.
Hilaria Baldwin have an Israel connection?
You don't know about the Hilaria Baldwin scandal?
I have. There's a scandal?
Where? What is your pop culture knowledge, mister? Hilaria Baldwin in 2020, while the pandemic was happening, was discovered to be a fake Spanish person married to Alec Baldwin, speaking in a Spanish accent, only to find out that she's from Boston. Excuse me. You should have a connection.
Well, now I like her.
Very Anglo-Saxon, all those things, but pretending to be Spanish that doesn't know how to say cucumber. It was a whole thing.
How does she say cucumber?
She was like, oh, I don't know how to say cucumber.
She's like, how you say cucumber? Cucumber.
That's what she said.
You know what? She has a million children. And so when you have a million children, maybe.
You forget that you're not Spanish.
Yeah, maybe you're like, I'm Spanish for this one.
Yeah. Wait, I'm interested because. In your special, you talk
about...
Yeah,
can we talk about my special? We've gotten to a million bits
Alex,
of obscure...
excuse me.
I'm sorry. I'm being an ungenerous guest.
You are. So you talk in your special about a neighbor in L.A. So you live in L.A.
I split time, but I'm here a lot more.
Yeah, in New York more than L.A.
I mean, I accepted long ago that being a comedian would necessitate just, like, having to travel, like, way more than I was comfortable with. And that has been the life. Like,
yeah.
I basically, my primary residence is like a Blue Samsonite. But like, I'm always on the road. I'm like in Providence this weekend. I'm in Bloomington the next weekend. I'm in LA at Netflix as a joke the weekend after. Like, I am like constantly on the move, which is okay. But it'd be nice to like settle down at some point, maybe halfway between the two in Lawrence, Kansas. And just like, you know.
Where do you see yourself more though, LA or New York?
I guess... New York is more representative of my personality.
I would say
like,
so.
Oh, well, thanks.
You're welcome.
I mean, I like
You're
it.
Welcome.
I like that.
Yeah.
New York is more representative of my personality, but in LA, there are like good things to like about LA. Whenever anyone's like, I hate LA.
Yeah.
Always like, it's a better personality trait than hating New York.
Right.
But like, I don't know. It's a very.
If you hate New York. Yeah, not a vibe.
Sometimes people are like, I hate New York City, which I actually get, but it's just like, okay, well,
cool.
Then don't come.
It's not cool, though. But to be honest, it's not cool.
It's a very tough, we have earthquakes now and eclipses.
I know, so we have earthquakes. The fact that we had an earthquake. So how did you get into comedy? Was it in Israel that it started sparking your interest?
I saw a really big comedy show in Boston when I was a teenager, and that like really sparked an interest. This guy, Dennis Leary, does a show every year called Comics Come Home. And so he's like one of probably the most iconic comedians ever to come out of Boston. Probably up there. And he puts on this comedy show with other iconic Boston comedians. And I went to see it because there was a sports connection. I was like interested in sports and I walked out a comedy fan. So like love Dennis Leary. And yeah, when I was in Israel, there were like five comedians who spoke English in the whole country. So I was like doing open mics by then. And like 2 months in, they're like, do 45 minutes. And I was like, ah. And so I think that started. But my comedy career didn't like really sort of find footing until like after college. I went to England and did a solo show there and like found a little bit more purchase that way.
So how did England like discover you? Mm. Like, do they get you more?
There's a huge festival there called the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the biggest arts festival on the planet. Like in years when they don't have the Olympics or the World Cup, it's like easily the biggest ticket selling event in the world, and there are like 3,800 shows a day. And because of like some crazy circumstance, my first show won the Edinburgh Comedy Award, which is like a very rare award for an American to be able to get. And it was like the luckiest and craziest thing that's ever happened to me. And I was able to like support myself as a comedian after that. And
so you stayed after winning the
show. I stayed. Also, I met someone there who lived in London, and she was, well, actually, no, she's married now with more children, but she was a single mother at the time. And so like, she wasn't coming back with me to...
Is she a comedian?
Oh, yeah. She's a brilliant comedian. Her name's Catherine Ryan. She's absolutely spectacular.
Is it the time when you started dating?
She had one daughter, Violet, who is like the funniest person I know. And like, yeah, we dated for a couple of years. Going back and forth was like pretty hard because I was like, we were long distance sometimes, like New York to London and then LA to London, which is really difficult, but like total doll of a person. And I would like live in her house in, you know, East London for a while. It was very nice.
So then you come back to New York and then you're like, that's it.
I went back to LA, actually.
Like, you knew that comedy was now your career.
Comedy was my career from like, after I won that award in 2014,
yeah.
I have never not worked as a comedian since then. I went back to the Red Sox for a few months after they had the marathon bombing.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I left the Red Sox, I had progressed to like writing speeches and like press releases. And so me and my boss and this recently departed guy, Larry Lucchino, I sort of helped with the first baseball game back after the marathon bombing, the public address speech. And in Boston, that was like a really cool thing, and it felt like something significant to be a part of. And then we won the World Series that year, which was really amazing. And so like, I thought that was a nice thing to leave baseball on.
Yeah.
So, like, I still occasionally like help out with, like, an old colleague calls with a question or something, but like, yeah, I've been pretty much comedy. It's also like such so much fun. It's like the most interesting thing in the world to me. So I wrote a couple TV shows in LA, and then TV shows writing I got canceled in like 2017, started writing this show, and then like middle of next year that started
writing Just For Us. And so in 2017 you started writing it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild. We're in 2024.
I know, but the sort of event that it's based on didn't happen until a bunch of months after I started writing it. But like, yeah, Just For Us has changed quite a bit. I wasn't even Jewish in the first iteration of Just For Us. I'm like a devout member of the Nation of Islam. So like very, very, very unusual.
Wait, so the event that it's based on.
I'm joking, obviously, right? Like, you clock that as a joke. I want anyone being like, oh, this guy loves Louis Farrakhan and on the pod.
So, because I was just thinking of the timing. Like, you started writing in 2017.
Yeah.
We're in 2024.
Yeah.
You were one man showing on Broadway.
That was 2023. Yeah.
Amazing.
It took a long time to get there. And also, like.
So you must be like crazy appreciating this moment. Now the special is out on Max.
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, it's out. Everyone can watch it.
It's been really nuts in the reception for the. We launched the special at the beginning of the week, and the reception has been like really warm and sweet. But it's been the run hasn't been perfect those 6 years. There were some really heartbreaking things that happened. Some really like, we had some bummers, but yeah, for the most part, it's been this like incredible transformative thing. And the story at the center of it is like, I went to this meeting of white nationalists in Queens, and I sat there for a while, and eventually one of them was like, sorry, but this guy's Jew. And I'm like, yeah, I'm Jew. And so like, that's what the show is broadly about. And it's been like really nice thing that people really responded to.
So I don't know if it says it all over my face, but I am a tea girly. Okay. I love tea. I feel like I don't look like that type of person. I feel like I look like the type of person who drinks like 18 coffees a day, but I don't. I barely drink a coffee. I am a tea girl. Okay. But I want to tell you guys about Lipton's boxed green tea bags. And they're just so good. I mean, Lipton really is just another word for tea. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's another word for tea. And literally, if you drink a Lipton green tea, it's really like wellness, okay? Like, it helps your health. It has good stuff in it. It has no bad stuff in it. That's what's so great about tea. Like, you're literally drinking water, but with a better taste and even better for you. So Lipton has this new signature blend green tea, which is a blend with a hint of jasmine green tea. It's like a floral fragrance. It's smooth, it's refreshing, and it's freaking amazing. They also have this new lemon, peach, and honey ginger tea that's a green tea, and it's more fruity. And it's crafted with a signature green tea base and blended with ingredients to impart the taste of real squeezed fruit, which we love. We love a fruity drink that has no bad stuff in it, okay? Drinking 2 cups of Lipton green tea daily is a great ally for wellness and a simple way to up your everyday healthy habits. So go try new Lipton green tea. I highly recommend it. I can't tell you anything more fun than shopping on Rakuten, because you'll literally just see like a cha-ching, like, oh, you bought these Adidas sneakers. Here is $11 back. Thank you. Thank you. So Rakuten is freaking amazing, you guys. If you haven't heard of Rakuten, download the app right now. Sign up. It is free. Some of your favorite retailers are on there, if not all of them. And they offer cash back on purchases. And this is real cash. This is like, set it up, get it to your PayPal, set it up, get a check in the mail. Either one, it's like for realsies, cash back. And guess what? Right now, Rakuten has a big give week going on, which means that your favorite retailers are offering 15% cash back. So hundreds of stores offering 15% cash back. So don't miss it. Some great stores that I love that are on there are Moda Operandi, Adidas, Ulta, Fenty Beauty, Tatcha. So you guys, don't miss this opportunity. Rakuten's big give week. It's the best way to save. It's on from May 6th to May 13th. And if you join today, you're going to get an extra 10% cashback boost. So go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app today. That's spelled R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it. Also, you guys, pause this right now and please, please, please do me a favor and go rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. It's super helpful. I appreciate you. Love ya.
Your show that I went to see, I think the last New York one, because I felt immense peer pressure. Like, I wasn't even at that point I wasn't in a cultured part of my life where I was like going to Broadway, you know?
Sure.
But I kept hearing about the show and this guy that got a one-man show on fucking Broadway. He's a comedian, and I knew of you because I had met you. And I was like, I need to see this. So I literally came to your last New York one. And felt like I needed, it was like one of those FOMO things. Like, I need to see this thing that everybody's talking about. And I was just like, I know it can be like condescending to say proud, but it's like, you're like, wow, I don't know him, but this is so huge. Like, even to get to that place, well, now it's like on Max, even bigger, more of the world can see it. But how did it get to even that kind of stage?
Well, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Really?
Sarah Jessica Parker. Put it on her Instagram when it was downtown. Well, I mean, I'm simplifying. Honestly,
that's
like really
nice, though, to give credit.
Oh, like a totally, like, the show owes so much to so many people. It literally, like, someone's like, Alex, this special thanks is comical. Like, in the HBO special, there are, like, 6, like, pages of special thanks. And, like, all those people helped, which is bananas. And
is
like,
Sarah Jessica Parker in there?
I actually don't know that she is. They don't know that she is. But I said on the Tonight Show that I like owe her a favor, because genuinely what happened was, anyway, the like we did it in 2018 for a while. And then I took some time off to write on a TV show for like a year and a half. And then Mike Birbiglia, who's like himself a pretty great solo show comedian, he heard about it. And Birbiglia was like, why don't I see if it's any good? We'll put it up for one night.
Like on Broadway?
Off Broadway. Off like Broadway. Way off Broadway. And we put it up for one night off Broadway. And Birbiglia was like, B plus. I was like, B plus, like the only good thing I've ever done. And Birbiglia was like, you need to cut 20 minutes and add 40 minutes. And like, so we did a UK tour that was like truncated by COVID. And then in 2021, we finally went up, and it's sort of like,
you went up off Broadway.
Off Broadway, a place called the Cherry Lane. Like, and it did pretty good. It was starting to get some momentum, and then Omicron happened and we shut down. But when we came back, the New York Times said a nice thing about that. And then SJP came and she put on her Instagram. And after that, it was like, I know it's like a silly thing to be like, this person put it on her Instagram. And then it went like,
yeah,
but it was like it after that.
Like, it was a noticeable change.
Yeah. No one could get a ticket for a while. It was like we moved theaters like 3 times.
So how do you go? Cause this is literal, but not everybody knows. Like, how do you get from off Broadway to Broadway? Mm. First of all, it's literal, right? It's also literal. Like, well, off-Broadway is not on Broadway.
And also, none of the theaters are on Broadway.
Right, none of the theaters are on Broadway. They're like, around Broadway.
They're in, like, one zip code around Times Square. One very confusing and hard to navigate zip code around.
And, like, a awful place to try to get to.
Oh, my God. Times Square, the beating heart of the creative scene in New York City, right?
Is the most
the
awful.
The M&M store is the, you know, but it is. Okay, so what had happened was, we had this nice run in New York, and then we had a nice run in D.C., and then, like, Jenny Gersten, who is a Broadway producer, saw it, and a couple of Broadway people had, like, asked about bringing it to Broadway, but it didn't, none of their plans seemed very, like, not just good, but, like, they'd be like, we charge this much a ticket, and I was like, I want to charge people, like, $1 billion a ticket to see, like, a one-man show. Like, I want, like, it should still be priced like a comedy, and then, like, Jenny and this woman, Rachel Sussman, and these two producers named Greg and Emily, like, they came with, like, a really thoughtful, coherent plan. And I was doing a show in London and they flew over to chat about it. And then I was like, okay, let's do this. And then, like, a bunch of people helped. Like, we had a really bad, the guy who directed the show was involved. And if you were at the last show, you know this, because I was, like, pretty
right.
Choked
you got
up.
Choked up about him.
Yeah, the guy who directed all my solo shows, the one that won that award a bunch of years ago, this show, his name was Adam Brace, and Adam was my, like, closest friend for, like, 11 years. And then, like, right before he started on Broadway, Adam passed away. He was, like, 43.
Random, like a sudden death.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Ugh, it was just the worst. But you know what? Not to be cliche, like, a lot of people with heavy air quotes here, like, stepped up. Like, all my friends started to, like, show up and, like, make sure I had, like, was, like, eating. And, like, and then, like, all these different Broadway people started, like, coming out of the woodwork to, like, politely offer help. And, like, and then audiences started, like, telling people. I don't know how much that had to do with Adam, but, like, it felt like a nice communal moment where everyone was, like, doing this thing. And also our producers were, like, very thoughtful. Conscientious. His family flew over for opening, which, like, tore me apart, was also, like, the nicest thing. But, like, yeah.
So somebody else stepped in instead of him.
A guy named Alex Timbers. I didn't want another director. So Alex is, like, credited as a creative consultant. But, like, the truth is he directed the special and did, like, a crazy amazing job. It looks so good. And, like, and also, like, gave a couple of, like, really important notes. Like, not to be too technical for, you know, your audience, but, like, with these things, once it's written, like, the thing that makes it go from, like, okay to, like, something worth seeing is, like, the notes and directions that you get from people. Oh, yeah, totally. So, like, even the comedy legends that came, like, when Billy Crystal came, he gave a, like, really amazing note. And, like, when Seinfeld came, he gave a note.
Did
and,
you
like,
ask them or do
oh,
they
yeah,
give...
I had to, like, pull it out of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, Billy Crystal's, like, weirdly very humble about, like, you know, the comedy that he does. And so I was like, can you give me a note? He's like, ah, no, no, no. And I could see that he, like, maybe had something. And he was like, please, now I enjoyed the show. It's okay. And then 2 days later, I got a call from Alan Zweibel, who's, like, a writer who's a friend of his and, like, in his own right, like, a legendary comedy writer. Alan Zweibel was like, Billy has a note if you want to hear it.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, please. Yeah. I'm, like, desperate for it. And he went, switch from one of these handheld mics to one of these headset mics.
Right.
And that changed the show completely. Like, without that, I don't think the show would go to Broadway or even
really?
Be, like, appropriate to Broadway. Oh, yeah. Like, I got so many little, like, push the word solo show is like such a misnomer. Like a million different people made this happen. And as you point out, not all of them are even thanked in this, like
as you point out, SJP got what's it called? Snubbed.
I should have to keep her. She should get 10% of everything for the rest of my life.
But did you ever think of it as a Broadway show? Because like it's so like, you know, what we know of Broadway. Why are you looking at me like that?
You think I thought my little show that started in a pub above a shoe store in 2018
was a Broadway show?
No, I had no idea. Even when it was happening, I was like in full denial.
But most stand-ups, it's like, yeah, it's a special or they're touring the country, like you said, and different. But this became a Broadway show. It's like it's crazy.
I'm the biggest fan of comedians. Like, genuinely, I think you could put me up against, like, I am such a fanboy. Like, part of this is all, like, an exercise to meet, like, Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Like, all this is still, I met him, he's chill. But, like, all of this is just, like, one kid's, like, comedy fantasy.
Yeah.
And, like, it's got real, like, It's got real Make-A-Wish vibes, this thing.
No, it doesn't.
And
stop.
I mean, like, I love doing it, but yeah, I don't know that there are, and all I'm saying is I know a lot about comedy because I'm a fanboy, and there aren't a ton of comedians who are lucky enough to get to do their show on Broadway. So, like, no, never thought it could happen.
Are you feeling like imposter syndrome over here?
Crazy. Absolutely
really?
Crazy.
That's yeah, what it feels like.
Well, like, here's the thing.
But take a moment. Like, it's you.
When every night on Broadway, there was one moment in the show where I would think to myself, like, you're doing your solo show on Broadway. You're doing a thing you wrote in like a back house in LA in 2017 Wild. On Broadway. You're doing this thing that you did in basements and pubs. And we had a show like July of 2018. It was a preview for Edinburgh and it was during the World Cup. I thought about this for the first time the other day. And like, it was during the World Cup. It was in England and England was playing Croatia. I think it was July 12th and or July 21st.
Well, thank you for... specifying.
Yeah. But like an audience member in the middle, there were like 12 audience members in the middle of this show. This audience member raised her hand and was like, excuse me, can we take a break for the game? And I was like, yeah, like let's take a break. I was like, well, everyone come back if we like take a break for the game. And the whole audience was like, yeah. And one guy was like, I'm watching it on my phone right now. You know, like it's so like we took a break, went to like a pub across the street, watched the game. And then came back, finished the gig, and then took a picture on stage together. And so, like, all these, like, nice... All I'm saying is that, like, the Broadway thing is so nice. It's, like, the most special thing. But also, like, and this is another horrible cliche. Like, the journey to get there had, like, a lot of joy in it. Maybe I'm feeling that a little more keenly because the guy who was a part of the journey, who I love so much, is not around anymore.
Right.
But, like, but truly, I'm just, like... So like I have imposter syndrome about myself, but also I worked really hard with lots of other really hard, really smart, funny people to like make this thing. And I'm so proud of the product and like it's the product. The story is the star. Like it's the product that has sort of carried it from stage to stage. It has some ideas have like good momentum and people that will help you direct them in the right way. Like sort of what
well,
it
for people that don't know, Just for Us is about your experience as a Jew in a room full of neo-Nazis. This is a true story.
Yes.
With some embellishments maybe along the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but this happened. You went to this meeting of neo-Nazis after going down like a Twitter hole of neo-Nazis.
Yeah, I mean...
Crazy.
It's obviously like I take comedy flourishes like pretty seriously. Like it's an important part of like doing the job. Like once I was arguing with my director about like a detail in the show and I was like, it's true. And he went, shame it isn't funny. And I was like, okay, but like, yeah. So the first goal is always to like be entertaining, which is why I'm always like very serious to like point out like it's not journalism. Someone's like, well, when they said this, and I was like, I don't remember if they said that. I'm trying like very hard to entertain people, and also I've told this story 500 times, and that was like 6 years ago.
Right.
I'm not gonna. I don't remember what I have for breakfast today. Like, right. I'm not gonna have like.
It's the same way
recall.
About your childhood when you like are told a story. Like, oh, you threw up in the back of the car when you were six. And then, like, you add things to it and it becomes, like, a whole thing.
I have so many stories that, like, I'm fascinated by the stories that we, like, tell ourselves. Like, it's might be a big part of the next show. And, in fact, I think probably will be. But, like, I have stories that I, like, remember vivid and perfect and cannot possibly be real. Like, I remember, right. like, a family vacation to Puerto Rico. And my family's like, we never went to Puerto Rico. And I was like, no, I remember going to Puerto Rico. And there was, like, a parakeet and Butterfinger BBs. And, like... No, like none of those things are real.
I know that it is wild.
And I was like, maybe I saw like a commercial for Corona right. when I was like
That's
six
so
or seven.
True. I have two like these memories. Like I have one where I'm like, remember we were on vacation and a dog was chasing me around the pool? And they're like, no. Like, where did I get that?
There's
That's
a little
so weird.
There's a little bit of that in Just For Us, which is probably my favorite like craft part of the show. Like we talk about our family having Christmas for a non-Jew who had nowhere to go for the holiday. We gave her Christmas. The story is frustratingly true. Like I almost feel like I haven't done my job.
And you have the picture.
We have the picture. And also it was fact checked by like it was fact checked by someone for publication. And we found like a couple of things we couldn't confirm, but like obviously our jokes
are
like
they're gonna
stay. Why
was it so important to fact check this one?
Because it was airing on like public radio. When they air on public radio, like when it was on This American Life. And so This American Life like does their job and makes sure that you don't like you know, lie to the American public because that's like that's an important part of their storytelling, or at least talk about the narrative framework that you're offering it in. And so, like, there's a part in the show where I go, I remember this. It's not true. Or I remember this. My father says it never happened. It's the single clearest memory from my childhood.
Yeah. And so like, point. Yeah.
Or like, I remember AJ saying this. AJ never said that. This is what AJ said. And yeah. By the way, there's comedy in those differences, which I love so much. But like, yeah, I think a comedian's job is always to like
make it better.
Curate, like add an artistic thing to it. Like,
it's but what your friend points out to you, which is so true, is that the essence of white privilege is being able to walk into a room full of wannabe neo-Nazis confident you will emerge unscathed.
Yes, I voiced that in a slightly more concise way for comedy, but yes, like it is. That. No, it's good.
It's so true. And by the way, you guys, I saw this show, like I said, on Broadway. It was so good. I took my mom. I was like, you deserve it. You know when you buy two tickets to something and you're like, who deserves
that's
to
so
come
nice.
With me?
And so, the last show, by the way, was like really
it was
special.
So special. I'm so glad that I made it before it was.
It was such before a, it. Like, oh God.
But it's such a good story. Do you feel like, because this is obviously not meant just for Jews. This is meant for Jews and non-Jews. Are non-Jews going to get all the nuances? Like, are they going to miss anything?
I mean, they have so far.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's one joke that I think is a little niche, but like, I kind of skate right by it.
Right. I remember you do that.
I'm like, and
you're
also,
like, you might not be Jewish enough to get this.
Or like, I don't even say that. That joke I explain. I go, my brother's an Israeli Olympian, winter Olympian. I go, I called him the Frozen Chosen for like 4 years.
Right.
And then I go, and then my mom was like, stop calling him that. And then I go, and this might be too Jewish for some of you, but I switched over to Shul Runnings.
Right.
And Shul means synagogue in Yiddish. But I explained that to the audience immediately afterwards, right? Because it's like important. But also, audiences are like pretty bright generally.
Yeah.
Like audiences are, and by the way, it is a question, which is like a completely, not even just a fair question, but maybe an essential question, right? But like, I have never heard Chris Rock ask like, will non-black audiences get this joke?
Mm-hmm.
Because like there is a universality in pretty much every experience. Like my Big Fat Greek Wedding is not just for Greek but it's unmistakably Greek.
Right.
And so like I've always thought that even the thing that you sort of bring up about the white privilege of walking into that room, but like whiteness is in the eye of the beholder, right? Like I can walk into that room, but that's one of the few rooms where I am unquestionably not perceived as white.
Right.
And so like there's a really interesting like tension there. And I love that tension, but like, you know, that tension is sort of a little foreign to like American audiences.
Yeah.
Like, we love binaries. We love like black, white, rich, poor, powerful, not powerful, cool, uncool, hero, villain. And so like Jews existing between the binaries of like white, non-white is like really fascinating, really true to me, and like really tricky. So like that's why I thought the story had like some weight that might make it a useful inflection point to like have those conversations while also like giving a ton of jokes to people, because I don't like comedy that's not funny.
Well, you guys, it's out on Max. You can watch it now. I want to know, aside from Billy Crystal, who else gave you advice?
Birbiglia gave me a ton of advice. Like Mike Birbiglia, who's like sort of probably the unquestioned master of the American solo show, gave like a load of advice. Seinfeld gave good advice. Steve Martin gave me like a line for the show. Just so good. So
can if tell you, us what it was?
No, I can't. It's contextual.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It wouldn't make sense. Uh-huh. I feel like set up. But if you're wondering whether or not to watch the show, it is co-written by Steve Martin. So,
so now you
I
know.
I wrote the whole show except for one line, but Steve Martin wrote the other line, so he gets credit. But in Phil Rosenthal, who does Somebody Feed Phil,
yeah.
Phil came and offered advice. And also like a ton of my friends, like my friend Danny Jollis and my friend John Rudnitsky and my friend Nick Callis, like a whole bunch of like young comedians, Chloe Ifshin, who's not a comedian, but is like a really good pal of mine. Like they all have like offered wisdom, which is like a
when
really
you know
nice
that
thing.
Like Seinfeld is at your show.
It's freaky.
Always, like, is it hard to like, do you feel more nervous that night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be lying to you. But yeah. You know, the funny thing is you do a couple
like
jokes.
You'd rather not
in.
Know maybe that he's there.
Well, you know, because you come into work and everyone's weird. And you're like, what's going on? And they're like, Seinfeld's here. And you're like, of course he is. Today is going to, you do the show like this. You're like,
yeah,
like you don't like you look over him. But I remember when Seinfeld was there, I kept thinking to myself, like, how did anyone ever shoot Abe Lincoln? Because the whole audience was like watching Seinfeld. And part of
that's
me was like,
wondering.
When Lincoln was there, wasn't everyone like, what does Lincoln think of this? Is Lincoln, in, does Lincoln like
right,
that?
Everyone's...
Does Lincoln think that's funny? Oh, no, Lincoln. Oh, no.
Wait, so but, you like, tried not to look at him.
I tried not to look at him, but it was still like 2022 and people were wearing masks. So.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see his face, which was really useful. But I saw Billy Crystal's hat going up and down, which was nice. So he was nodding a lot. That's I was like, nice. Oh, Billy Crystal likes it. And then I heard Jerry's laugh once or twice, and I was like, well, that's good. I mean, like, it is truly.
And everyone's laughing. I mean, it's such a funny show. And I watched a little bit of it. Not that I needed a refresher, but before our interview, I was like, let me watch it again, like on TV this time. Because I was there, if you didn't catch that. And it's like, it's actually like watching Seinfeld, because it's like, I saw it, but it's not like I'm like, oh, this isn't funny again. Like, it's funny again. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, I love, that's, by the way, that's what narrative does for you. Genuinely, like, you tell a story to people that's an interesting story that they're interested in, and more importantly, that's so have true. Opinions about.
Yeah.
And, like, can have good conversations about. They will listen so that they, like, find new things in the story so they can have more conversations right. about it. So, like, the story, we always said that the story is the star, and it truly is. Like, a big part of, like, making the show better, because I say I started writing the show in 2017.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, I wrote this show before that story happened.
Which is wild to think about.
Which is wild to think about. And, like, after a while, it had all these distractions and, like, a lot of jokes that didn't quite belong. So, like, Birbiglia's big note was, like, can you clear, like, 20 minutes of stuff that... And I was like, well, it gets a lot of laughs. And he's like, who cares? It's, like, not germane to the story that you're trying to tell, like, the subtext that you're trying to communicate.
Yeah.
And so, like, the stories, they're all belong in the same sort of, like, they all sort of, like, hang together in a, like...
And also, I love that there's, like, a closure to it. Like, that thing is, like, I feel like it gives you chills at the end that it all comes together.
The button at the end, the narrative closure was, like, the thing that made me think, like, this is a story, this is a thing that's, like, a really... I love that part. And I also think audiences deserve a magic trick.
Yeah.
But, like narratively, that's a little bit of a magic trick, but I've always liked that when I go see a show and the comedian or the performer or the actor is like, here you go.
Yeah.
Something to take home in the doggy bag.
Yeah.
And so, like, wanted to give that to people. And, like, again, had a lot of help though, setting it up and making it more effective and clearing away some brush around it and making it sing. So, like, had a ton of people.
It's so good. It's so good, Alex. You should be really proud, and everybody should watch it out on Max. There are two things that literally stayed with me that I was cracking up when I was rewatching it, was the, you never know.
Oh, yeah.
And can you believe it?
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're just such good moments. Everybody watch Just For Us out on Max. A quick pop culture quiz before
God,
you go.
Oh, my God, please. I was like, am I not getting my pop culture quiz? Like,
shut up. No, you're going to get a pop culture quiz, good. Especially because you're terrible at it. So I've decided.
Okay.
Fine, let's see. Name three pregnant celebrities currently.
You.
No, I...
Oh wait, am I not supposed to tell people? No. Oh God, I'm so sorry. Three pregnant celebrities currently. Well, guessing Hilaria Baldwin is always a good idea.
That's a good guess, but no.
No, okay, let me think about this. Three prego celebs.
You don't have one.
You know what? I'm working here.
Okay. Okay, I'll ask you the next question while you're thinking.
My face, I just caught a look at my face while I was thinking. My thinking face is really...
Here, the next question. While you're thinking, you better have one. What's the name of Taylor Swift's new album that's going to drop?
The Tortured Poets Society.
Nice. When is it dropping?
Is it June or July?
I don't know.
Or maybe it's August 12th August
I feel like
or something?
It's something 13th. She loved
August
the number
13th. July 13th. I don't know, but it's the summer.
Okay. Which reality star is on Broadway right now?
Are they in Chicago?
Yeah. Her.
They always put Roxy in Chicago.
Yeah, she's Roxy in Chicago. Oh, was that just a guess?
No.
That was a left pocket guess.
It's always, no, they always put a reality star in as Roxy in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's always like, Omarosa is Roxy in Chicago. Who is
Wait,
it?
Wait, is that the last reality TV show you watched? Omarosa
and
the
You think I watched The Apprentice? You think when I was an unemployed young person, I watched a show where they fired unemployed
but
young
I feel
people?
Like we watched it.
No, that was the best part of being unemployed was no one ever fired you. And he took that from us even. So like, I'm not, I'm actually curious. Who is it? Who's the?
Ariana Maddox. She's from Vanderpump Rules.
I don't know.
She was involved in Scandoval. If you've heard of it.
I remember Scandoval.
Okay, good. A pregnant celeb?
Emma Stone?
No, and you're friends with her. You know she's not pregnant. Or is she?
Jesus Christ. Hold on.
No, I don't know. Who's pregnant? Jenna Dewan.
Jenna Dewan is
Suki
pregnant?
Suki Waterhouse just gave birth.
That's right. I knew that.
Hilary Duff, Ashley Tisdale, Vanessa Hudgens.
Wow, you know all of these things? What are you hiding in a gynecologist's office? Jesus Christ. You're an OBGYN to the stars? I don't know who's pregnant. Are you kidding? It's not something I go around asking people. I mean, excuse me, are you pregnant? I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I know it's a premiere. Suki Waterhouse just had a baby with Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
I've improved. I'm not saying Patterson anymore, but we're still signing Patterson on all my checks, though. So, wait, what else? What else do you got?
No, that's it.
You gave me two questions?
I gave you
and
three.
And call it a quiz?
I gave you three. Taylor Swift's new album, Reality Star on Broadway, and Pregnant Celeb.
Do you want to just throw one off the goddamn cuff instead of a...
What? What do we want?
Yeah.
No, we don't want Bravo.
No, I don't want Bravo. I like Andy Cohen's show on Bravo, but sometimes I watch it and don't know who anybody is.
I know. I feel like sometimes he's not sure either.
I'll be like, who is this person? Who's this bartender?
Like, you should be a bartender.
What?
No.
No, I will never be a bartender. No. I want to do the show. I will not bartend.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's
it's
below
absolutely,
you.
It's not below me. There are really great people that bartend, but I am not fun like that. Like, I am like a different kind of fun.
You're
I
not
need
bartender
to watch something
fun.
Critique. No, I will.
Wait, important. Are you coming out with a podcast?
Yes, but it's not announced yet.
Okay, that's not announced.
It's not announced
but you're
yet,
working on new material.
Working on new material. I'm touring a little bit. I'm writing stuff. I'm acting a little bit. I'm in that Seinfeld movie, Unfrosted.
Oh, with Amy?
Amy Schumer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't call her Amy, but yes, I love Amy Schumer. Amy Schumer is...
With Amy Schumer. Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've known her forever, but still, like, you know.
Spoiler alert, she's the person I wrote the sauce to. Oh my God, she's so judging. Now I have to think what she wrote back because she probably was judging and I didn't catch the joke. Anyway, Alex, thank you so much for coming on.
Everybody,
go watch Just For Us on Max. It's out now. Follow Alex everywhere. He says Twitter is dying, but he's really active there.
I'm really active on Instagram. I'm more of an Instagram
guy. Really?
Gal.
You're very tweety.
I like Instagram.
He's active on Instagram,
okay.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Not Skinny But Not Fat. Follow me on Instagram at Not Skinny But Not Fat. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any episodes. Rate the podcast that you love so much on Apple Podcasts and write a little review. If you tell me you did, I'll give you a big virtual smoocheroo. Thank you guys so much for listening and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.